We are continuing in our series in Proverbs, and if you would like a handout and would find that helpful, there may be some at the back, I don't know. And also, let me remind you that tomorrow evening at our home, there is going to be an information evening about Proverbs. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be like, but I'm going to talk about Proverbs. We'll talk together about it, about how it works as a book, how we are to listen to it. And if you would find that at all helpful, come and join me. And if you wouldn't, then stay at home. That's fine. We are in the second of our series in this book of Proverbs, this book of wisdom, of biblical wisdom. Last week we saw in the introduction that Solomon is the one who's pulled together this compilation of wisdom teaching, and he begins by telling us what it is for, that wisdom is this skill for living the beautiful life. And this collection of Proverbs has been given for a purpose. It's put before us in order to bring about change. The aim of Proverbs is transformation in the lives of those who hear. And the promise is that as we absorb the wisdom teaching, we will change. And last week we saw that if we want to enter onto that journey of change into living a beautiful life, the first step, Proverbs chapter 1 verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's where it all starts. And then what happens in Proverbs is the next nine chapters take us into a family home. Well, that's the setting of the first nine chapters of Proverbs. Look at verse 8. We see what is happening in this family home. It says, "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching." See, in the home there's a boy, a son, and he's growing up. This week, Matty, our youngest, has started school. He's 4 years old. Sent him away off to school. It just seems like a moment since he was born. Off in his school uniform. And I know it's not going to be long until we're sending him off to secondary school. And then beyond that, we'll send him off into the big wide world, because that's what children do. Children grow up. They grow up and then they grow wings and they fly. Or they flop. One of the two. Well, in Proverbs chapters 1 to 9, we get to be a fly on the wall in a family home where a son is growing up and he has come to that point of moving on. He's on the threshold of entering into the big wide world. And his mum and dad, they sit him down, as it were, on a sofa, mum on one side, dad on the other side, and they say to him, "Listen. Listen, boy, we want to tell you about the world that you're going to be living in. We want to tell you what it's going to be like. We want you to know what you're going to face. We want you to know what to expect as you enter the big wide world so you can be ready for it." Now, parents tend to discover that these types of conversations need to be repeated. So Proverbs chapter 1 to 9 give us 14 of these conversations, sofa chats, that's what I'm going to call them. 14 sofa chats, mum on one side, dad on the other, speaking to their son, getting him ready to enter the big wide world. And the first one is our passage today, verse 8 to 19 of chapter 1. So look again, verse 8. "Listen, my son, to your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. They are a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck." The chat hasn't really started yet. But before it even does, what is set before the boy and before us as we listen in is the value of this teaching. This teaching, they are a garland to grace your head. Now, the instruction that is passed from these parents onto their child that we're listening to, it is the wisdom teaching of the Bible. And you see what it does to those who receive it? It is a garland to grace your head. This teaching, for those who receive it, it makes them beautiful. Graces their head with beauty. It adorns them with loveliness. Now, the picture is that as these parents instruct their son, they are putting onto him these decorations. It's a very rich image. It's an image that gets filled out 1,000 years after these Proverbs were written. 1,000 years after these Proverbs were written, the Son of God was born in a manger. And we're told in Luke's Gospel that the Lord Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favour with God and man. Now Jesus lived the beautiful, wise life. The beauty of Christ leaps from the pages of the scriptures. And then, as we see what happened to the Lord Jesus, his beautiful life was given. Was given for his people. When he went to die on the cross, he gave his life for his people. And as he did that, he gave his beautiful life to his people. And so that means that those who have trusted themselves to Jesus Christ, those who have called on Christ to be saved, to be forgiven of their sins, Jesus' people are told in Romans 13, clothe yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ. The beautiful life of Jesus, all the wise living of Jesus is available to his people to put on for themselves. His life becomes a garland to grace your head. And I tell you this to, I guess to kind of raise the intensity of what is on offer as we come to the book of Proverbs. In the book of Proverbs in verse 8, the son is urged to listen to his parents as they impart wisdom, because the wise life is the beautiful life. And for us, as we listen today, we sit at a point in time when much more has happened. The Christ has come. And the offer of wisdom has been filled out. The offer for those who trust Christ is that as we sit and listen to the way of wisdom, we will grow into the likeness of Christ himself. We'll be putting on the beautiful, wise life of Jesus. In fact, even more than that, this garland to grace your head. The meaning here isn't that you stand in front of a mirror and admire yourself. This gracing is about others, about what others see, about the drawing of others, the impact on them, the beauty of the wise life being seen by others and attracting them. And just imagine that. Imagine if believers today, if Christians, what if we were more clothed with the beauty of Christ? What if we wore this garland of grace boldly before others? Now, it might be, as Peter writes in the New Testament, people may see your good deeds. They may see the beauty of this wise life and glorify God on the day he visits us. Imagine that. And as we do, let's come and take our place, that fly on the wall, to listen to this first sofa chat. It's an instruction. The instruction is summarized in verse 10. My son, if sinful men entice you, do not give in to them. And then the instruction is unpacked in more detail. In verse 11 to 19, the whole of this chat is, and if this is happening, then this is what you should do. If this, then this. That's the chat that we have. And so it begins with the if this, the situation. So what is the situation for this instruction? Well, it's the presence of sinful men. We're all sinners, of course, the Bible tells us that. But what we have here is it's a caricature of someone who is driven only and constantly by unrestrained godlessness. And the parents imagine for a son a situation where these sinners are putting pressure upon the boy. If they entice you, do not give in to them. Literally, it says, do not be willing. It kind of starts with a bit of a bang, really. There's no gentle easing of the son into this. Straight away, the parents are drawing battle lines. They're saying, in the world, there will be these sinners, and there will be this fight for your affections, for your willingness. And the parents then imagine the speech of these sinners. What the son will hear as he goes out into the world. He will hear an invitation. Come along with us. Let's lie in wait for innocent blood. Let's ambush some harmless soul. He's being invited to join a gang. Invited to violently attack some random person. And the reason in verse 13, we will get all sorts of valuable things. It's a mugging, isn't it? Robbery. Beat someone up or worse and then take their goods. So, These parents, they sit down with their son, they want to get him ready for the big wide world, and their first lesson for him is basically, don't kill people and don't steal. Is that really a good place to start? When Matty started school this week, I said, remember to say please and thank you. I didn't add, oh yeah, don't kill people. Now, when I left home, I don't remember at all what my parents said to me, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't, don't be a pirate and take to a life of murder and pillaging. I probably would have remembered that and said they were crazy. Now, look, I don't want to be too silly about it, because I know there are places in the world today, in our country today, where there is a massive need for parents to impress upon their children the huge danger of joining a gang. Now, this passage will have a particular relevance for those situations. I'm not that convinced it was the situation of the writer in Proverbs chapter 1. And we have to ask, is this real? Is it a live issue? What was it, a live issue then? And more pressing, perhaps, is it for us? Now, as we come and we seek to listen to this wisdom teaching, and the first point is don't kill people, and I think, well, I don't think that's going to change too much about how I live this week. But you know, wisdom teaching takes time to marinate. We need to sink ourselves in it and let the juices soak into us. So let's dig into this a bit. Why is anything these sinful men say enticing? Let's start there. Now, if you were to offer me a piece of chocolate cake, feel free to. If you do, I will find that enticing because I love chocolate cake. But if after the service you say to me, oh, why don't we hang out this week and go and kill someone? I won't find that enticing. So what is it that is going on here? What is it that is enticing about what these sinful men say? I think maybe there are three things that make it enticing, and each one just gets a bit deeper as it goes along. First of all, the invitation is enticing because of the pleasure of violence. I wasn't quite sure whether we should start here or even go here at all, but it is right on the surface of the invitation, isn't it? Come, let's lie in wait for innocent blood, let's swallow them alive. Now, for some of us, that will sound very strange. And yet, others of us will know a pleasure that comes from violence. Now, when I was a teenager, I think I probably survived my teenage years by playing rugby. And part of the attraction of rugby was the physical confrontation. And I think that was a great help to me when I was a teenager, with all that goes on when you're a teenager. But it's easy for me to imagine that pleasure removed from the legitimate sphere of the game to become something else. You know, there are mountains of evidence that we will know of that explores how exposure to violence, either directly or indirectly by what we watch or computer games or whatever it is, how that exposure nurtures a pleasure for violence that would make an invitation like this hard to resist. And yet those who aren't repulsed, those who are repulsed by such physical violence may yet find that such violence does live in their hearts. Now, the invitation is enticing because of the pleasure of violence. It's the pleasure of bringing others down. It's what you see in gossip. The gossip that murders the reputation of someone else. The pleasure of seeing someone fall. Or when someone who has the life that you long for fails. Their career goes belly up, or they lose their money, or their relationships fail, or their friends reject them, and you feel a delicious sense of justice. Now, at the level of our hearts, that is indistinguishable from those who delight in physical violence. Now, whether or not you are enticed or repulsed by violence, these parents are saying to their son, when you enter the big wide world, you will be exposed and you will have opportunities to express what is going on in your heart. The sin that is in your heart will be able to come out in a way that it wasn't when you were under the protection of the family home. Now, first of all, I think the invitation is enticing because of a love of violence, the pleasure of violence. Secondly, I think the invitation is enticing because of the love of money. Now, what's the purpose of what they're proposing? Verse 13. We will get all sorts of valuable things and fill our houses with plunder. And the boy gets left just to fill in the gaps of what all sorts of valuable things looks like for him. The invitation says, you can come and have it all. All the possessions your heart desires. Now we just need a couple of minutes of daydreaming and we can fill in the blanks pretty quickly for ourselves, can't we? What sorts of valuable things would you love to fill your houses with? It's a dangerous question, isn't it? And it's not that wealth is wrong. It's not wrong to have valuable things, but the enticement is a love for things that squashes a concern for others. Valuable things treated as of more value than people. Now, the parents are showing how irresponsible a desire for wealth can be. Now, this enticement is a desire for wealth that follows complete indifference to the harm caused to others. I read this week someone say, sinners love wealth and use people, saints love people and use wealth to help others. Sinners love wealth and use people, saints love people and use wealth to help others. And we know the truth of that. We're not going to argue with that, but we also know the sparkle and the invitation of possessions and things and wealth and money and what money can buy. We know the enticement of treating things as having more value than people. And so the invitation is enticing because of the love of money. And then thirdly, I think the invitation is enticing because of belonging. Now listen again to what the sinner's invitation is. Come along with us. Let us lie in wait. Let us ambush. Let us swallow them. We will get. Cast lots with us. We will share. Very inclusive. Say, come and belong. Come and, into our community. Come and be part of us. Join us. We're going to be a band of brothers. It's a huge feature of contemporary gang culture. A newspaper article just recently quoting a youth worker in South London. He says, one of the reasons they join gangs is because it creates the sense of community. It's a family and they get comfort within the gang. Yes, there is violence, but that's just part of it. They are with their friends, are comfortable and value the loyalty. That appeal isn't just limited to joining a gang. Deep within the fabric of our being is a yearning to belong. We were made for it, made for relationship, made for community. And the invitation to belong is one that entices us. It grabs us. It grabs at something very deep within. The invitation is enticing because of belonging. And that's the situation presented by the parents to their son as they sit on the sofa getting him ready for the big wide world. They say, if sinful men entice you, and then they unpack the enticement, a love for violence, a love of money, a longing to belong. And then when the situation is set, they urge their son to resist. And what is the instruction they give to him? Look at verse 15. My son, do not go along with them. Do not set foot on their paths. The sinners say, come, and the boy is told, do not go there. Don't join them. Don't even put one foot on their path. And notice it's not an instruction not to do. It's not a don't do that, don't murder, don't steal. It's not that kind of instruction. They could have said that. They'd be right to say that. But the instruction is don't go with them. Don't set foot on their paths. It's an instruction about relationships. And I think the heart of that is that it's about influence. Don't be influenced by them. What are your influences? It's a question that musicians and artists get asked. What are your influences? But it's one we can ask ourselves. What are your influences? What do you reckon? What is the company you keep in life? Whose voice is loudest in your head? Who is it that you join with and you share the values of and the identity of and the hopes of and the dreams of? What situation in life, amongst what kind of group do you feel the least conflict? Among whom are you most at ease? Now, as this boy enters the big wide world, he's told, you will be influenced. So choose wisely. same is very true for us. Very, very true. Every day we experience in life influences. We're constantly being invited to join in. And those influences might be personal, the people we open ourselves up to, the people we listen to, the people we admire, the people we want to imitate, people whose approval we crave. Now, who's the first person you want to tell? Well, the influences might be impersonal, though. The media we're exposed to, adverts. There's a whole multi-billion pound industry spent on trying to influence you. Sources of entertainment. And what we watch implicitly invites us to share a particular set of values. And once we belong, once we adopt the values, our behaviour will flow from it. I read someone say this week, if you're going to be on social media or Netflix for an hour, you need to read the Bible for an hour because you've just been lied to and now you need the truth. What do you make of that? Now, what is the instruction to those enticed by sinners? Do not go along with them. Do not set a foot on their path. Why? Now, the summary of the instruction is verse 10. Do not give in to them. Literally, do not be willing. That's a difficult instruction. It's not simply saying don't do it. It's saying don't want to do it. It might look enticing. It is going to grab at you, but you are to shift your desires. Don't want to do it. Now, that's an instruction that needs a bit of ballast, isn't it? So what's the basis for the instruction? Let's look at verses 16 to 19. And the parents explain the reason for what they're asking. They say, don't go with them, for their feet rush into evil. They are swift to shed blood. Now, often our response to being told not to go somewhere is to ask how far we can get, how close we can get. Don't go near the edge. Well, how close is near? I'm not going to go all of the way, but isn't it okay just to take a few steps before I turn back? But these parents say, these wise parents say, don't put a foot on the path because the path rushes towards evil. There's a momentum once you're on the path that's hard to resist. Once you take a step, it's difficult to resist. It's difficult to get disentangled. It's like stepping on one of those travelators at the airport. You get whisked along, the momentum takes you away. No. Why do they say don't go there? Well, first of all, very plainly, because there is evil. Secondly, they say don't go there because that way is self-defeating. Verse 17, now if you put a trap where a bird can see it, even a dumb bird will know to avoid it. But these men who are plotting to bring others down will find their plotting ultimately is to their own harm. They are going to shoot themselves in the foot. And everything they seek, in the end, will be lost. And the loss will be very great. And verse 19 says, such are the paths of all who go after ill-gotten gain. It takes away the life. It takes away the soul of those who get it. See, the sinners say, come with us. Join us on our path. Come this way. We're going to get rich quick. You're going to get a community, you'll get a family, you'll get a place of belonging, you will get what your heart desires. And the parents say, that is a lie. Their path will fail, their promises will fall short, and in the end it is their own lives they will lose. They say, pack that into your heart, son. Fix your heart on that reality and you won't want anything to do with the enticement of sinners. But our hearts aren't easily persuaded. Now, how do these parents know this anyway? How can they say these things? Well, the strength of the instruction comes from their worldview. Now, the weapon of argument they have is not simply what they've seen in life, it's what they've been told, what they have received. How can they know this is what the way will be? Well, it's because Proverbs chapter 1, verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, the world is not a wild west. It's not a place without accountability. Despite appearances, the world is made and ruled by a holy God who is all sovereign and has promised justice. And by definition, sinners do not consider the world to be ruled by a holy God who will bring people to account. Psalm 73 the poet muses on the happy path of the sinner. He sees the wicked prospering. He sees them happy. He sees them rich and not burdened. And he's perplexed by it. He sees them doing everything promised by the sinners in Proverbs 1. And then the fear of the Lord perspective comes. And in the psalm he says, when the fear of the Lord perspective comes, then I understood their final destiny. That's verse 19 of our passage. The parents are teaching the final destiny of the sinners. And the unspoken question hanging for the son is, do you really want to go there? And the strength of the instruction comes from the worldview upon which it is built, packaged under the banner of the fear of the Lord. And as we saw last week, the fear of the Lord is the right response to who the Lord is. The Lord who is awesome and terrifying and at the same time boundless in love and compassion. The fear of the Lord that doesn't make us run from him but draws us to him. You see, the sinners say, come with us. But as we go through Proverbs, we will hear other invitations. Invitations that anticipate the great invitation of Jesus Christ, who says, come to me. And that's a true invitation of belonging. We are hardwired to yearn to belong. This summer, as we drove back from Keswick and the Lake District, we listened to the story of Black Beauty. Thank you, Gatwood, for lending us that. Thank you. It's a story about a horse. Don't want to give too much away. It's a well-told story. And the horse has a pretty tough life. It gets harder and harder. The horse is abused and mistreated, not cared for. And then as the story comes to an end, Black Beauty is bought by someone and taken into the care of a stable hand who recognizes him. And the last days of Black Beauty are spent in a place where he is loved and cared for and known. And as this ending was described, maybe because we've been driving for a number of hours, but tears were flowing down my cheek. It's a story about a horse. But it's not really. It touched something deep within, a longing, a yearning for home. Now the sinner's invitation is deeply enticing because it offers us belonging, but it is false. But when the Lord Jesus says, come to me, he is inviting us home. And there's nothing false about him at all. The fear of the Lord, as Psalm 73, the fear of the Lord helps us understand the final destiny of those who reject God in life. It is not home. They will be rejected by God for eternity. But the fear of the Lord helps us understand the final destiny of those who come to the Lord Jesus in this life. We are promised a home with him and belonging for all the ages. It's the fear of the Lord. That's the perspective that can shift the desires of our hearts and make us unwilling to go where we should not go. So what's the use? Well, what's the use of what we're talking about today? At the introduction to Proverbs, we saw last week, the first 7 verses, it says we all have something to learn from the teaching of the Proverbs. And what we have to learn depends on who we are. So, what are you being taught through this passage from the Bible this morning? That'd be quite a good question to ask people afterwards. In a few moments we'll stop, we'll have some coffee and we'll chat together. Would you dare, please would you dare, over coffee, some people are feeling terrified at the moment, to ask people, what was the thing you needed to be taught this morning? So what is the use of this passage? And let me try to work through a couple of scenarios. What about for those who are already on the way with sinners? Now, of course, this is a caricature set before us. The people referred to are not likely to self-identify as sinners. I think we'd probably find it difficult to consider ourselves to have joined the way with sinners in the way it's described here. Now, by definition, sinners do not consider, they don't live as though the world is ruled by a holy God who will bring people to account. So if you are here this morning as someone who is not seeking to bring your life under the authority of the Lord Jesus, however your life is lived, that's what I mean by those who are on the way with sinners. And if that's the case for you, then there is a loud warning in this passage. that the way of your life will end with you losing your life. Now, Jesus said, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet in the end forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Now, what good is it for you this morning on the path of your life if it ends with you losing your soul? So what must you do? Well, if you hear the warning, then believe on the Lord Jesus and you will be saved. Jesus said, and he said it in all truth because he is the truth, come to me and I will give you rest. So come to him and he will bring you home. What is the use of this passage? What about for those who are being enticed? Now, how well do you know your heart? Now, how well do you know the leading of your heart's desires? Now, we're not really sitting on the sofa in the comfort of a living room. We're already in the big wide world, aren't we? We go out into this week ahead, the noise will be deafening. Messages bombarding us and claiming us. And for those of us who know that we have lifted our foot towards the path of sinners. Now perhaps that's in an attitude of not loving others. Harbouring envy in our hearts. Delighting in the fall of others. Bitterness, refusing to forgive. Enticed by violence. Perhaps it's in our attitude towards wealth and possessions. We value them above people. Remember the quote I mentioned earlier? Sinners love wealth and use people. Saints love people and use wealth to help others. What's your attitude towards your wealth? Your home? Your possessions? Your money? Everything you have? Whether you have much or little, do you see it as a means to bless others? Or a means to bless you? Perhaps the lifting of our foot towards the way of sinners is in our influences. What are we opening ourselves up to? Are we opening ourselves up to influences that will lead us away from Christ? In our confidence, in our advisors, the values we soak ourselves in through the entertainment that we choose. Perhaps we're enticed in some other way. The passage warns you to consider if you take the next step, what will follow? Now, if you take that step, are you sure you can resist taking the next step and the next? Now, if you take that step, then look at where the path is leading to. The lie of happiness, the lie of finding belonging will shrivel. And you will have lost your soul. That's where it goes to. So hold back your step. If you are enticed, do not take the next step. But come again to the Lord Jesus. And he will give you rest. And he will give you truth. And he will give you life. If you submit your ways to the Lord Jesus, he will direct your paths. And he will make them straight. Now, if that describes you today, then I want to urge you to get some brothers and sisters to pray for you. Not in the week, but today, right here this morning. Find someone and ask them to pray with you. Don't leave without doing that. If you know you are enticed to take a step on the path of sinners. What use is this passage? And what about if someone asks us to pray with them like that this morning? What use is this passage for those who are alongside those who are being enticed? Now, all of us, sooner or later, will find ourselves in that kind of position. When a brother or sister in the church is struggling, and maybe they don't even realise they're struggling, but you see them being enticed, you see their affections are getting confused and they're leaning away from Christ in some attitude or behaviour or connection. Now, if you find yourself alongside someone who's being enticed, how does this passage help? Well, do you see what the parents are doing for their son? They're giving him truth. They're exposing to him the lie of sin's folly, showing him where the path will lead. And with great love, they're saying, my son, if you follow that path, it will lead to your harm. That's what the New Testament tells us to do. It says, "See to it, brothers and sisters, that none of you has a sinful, unbelieving heart that turns away from the living God, but encourage one another daily, as long as it is called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness." Sin deceives, and it lies. And we're called alongside to help each other identify those lies, so that we might keep coming to Jesus. And if we find ourselves in that position alongside those who are being enticed, then we need to think about our own feet. And Galatians 6 says, when you're in that situation, watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. What is the use of this passage for you? What's the thing that you need to be taught this morning?